Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We're live here at the Patron Platinum Club inside Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Los Angeles Kings tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop here on these airwaves. Pete and Howe will have your call. I'll have your pregame starting at 6. Let's head over to West End. Let's talk to their football coach, Clark Lee, who's on the line with us. Coach, good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing very well. Good afternoon to you guys. Glad to be with you.
Hard-fought game on the road Saturday at South Carolina. You guys didn't get the start you're looking for, but I have to believe you as the head coach and your staff liked the response, though, right, that your team wasn't ready just to, like, throw it. You guys fought. You get behind on the road after a tough week the week prior. I have to believe you were satisfied with the response after the first quarter.
Yes, like when given the circumstances, we have to battle, and I think the competitive decision there to counterpunch and to play, you know, I thought really one of the best examples of complementary football that we've been able to put on display, you know, there to fight back and to claim a lead, you know, I mean that's I think a representative of the character that we're building in this program and the environment. I think we have to now find a way to finish that one, which is ultimately the challenge. And no one feels good about the fact that ultimately we came up short.
Yeah. And that's what I was getting at, because I know you've come on these airwaves and told us, you know, it's about you're setting things up for, you know, the stretch run. You're trying to set this up long term, and you know, this is a build, and part of that build is getting on the right mindset, the culture, and, you know, hanging in there, keep fighting, battling till the end. You're right. It sounds like, you know, you're not in the business of close but no cigar, you know, oh, just close, but it was a loss. But you have to love the fact that you're on a road and in the SEC and the conference, and you get in a tough environment and you get behind. And your team fought, and you had a chance. You put yourself in a chance to win the game.
Yeah, we did, and you know, we were able to step back and have some perspective on the progress we are making. And we also know that there's at times pain in progress, and you experience the suffering of a close loss, and you take ownership over it, and you hope that, you know, what you learn from that, what you take away, you know, how challenging it is. The margin between winning and losing is that line is so fine. And we have to make sure that through four quarters that we're positioning our team to finish. And so, you know, our program deserves more. Our players deserve more. And our quest now is to find that more in our preparation ahead of a game that we feel like will be another one where we can battle it out and be in a tight game late, and hopefully this time have a chance to pull away and win one at home. That'll be huge for our guys and for our confidence. But at the same time, you know, again, we keep a perspective about the gains we are making, the progress that's being made, and we're excited about if we continue to compound on that progress, where this program's headed. And that's, you know, that long-term vision you speak of, where, you know, not everything is measured in the short-term result. We have to understand that this is a journey, and you know, we know where we are on the journey. We know where we want to be, and it's just about making that next step. When you look at our season and you talk about where we started and, you know, what we learned about our team in game one against East Tennessee State, where we faced adversity there in the second quarter and really never woke up from that. I do think we've come a long way from a competitive standpoint, and we got a decision to make, we got to continue to make those competitive decisions in the moment to position our team to again have a chance to win games and lead.
What did you think of the play of your quarterback, Mike Wright?
I was proud of Mike. I thought he stepped up in a situation where it's his first start of his career, and he's been, you know, playing in spurts this year, but never really has gotten a rhythm out there. You know, coming out of camp, he was kind of 1B for us. So Kenny won the job, but Mike had really done a nice job, you know, in the competition, and you know, just never really got a rhythm early in the season to be able to play. Was hurt in the first game, was kind of limited in the second game, and so for him to come out and have total ownership over that position, I thought he led the offense. I thought he kept composure. I thought he made good decisions with the ball. Even the interception, I thought was just an exceptional play by their defensive end, and one that we can help, you know, occupy the end up front and do some things that will allow that play to get off. You know, he was able to generate explosive offense on his own, but also empowered his teammates to do the same. We were more explosive than we've been all year, which was a focal point coming out of the Florida game where we were so methodical in our drives. There's just a lot to build on there, and yet it's his first start, and so you're looking at a guy that is, you know, is really like, it's like playing a true freshman. He played a different system a year ago. He played sparingly. You know, he's learning a new system this year, and he gets his first start. He performs well, and now we're excited about where he can go, you know, moving forward as he progresses and learns.
Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, and Clark, you can't help but notice the makeup of both of the guys. I really like Mike Wright's presence. He's got enthusiasm. He's got the attention of everybody. I like how he carries himself. But I also noticed Ken Seals, not dressed for the game, but he's still very involved on the sideline. That looks like something you really like in terms of, you know, trying to build that culture that you talk about a lot.
Everyone wants to watch a team play together. Like, that's what, as fans, we love when we show up and we see a team that's connected, that's spirited, that plays together, plays for each other. And so part of environment and culture is building in this idea. You know, what we do, I think, is our human nature is default kind of every man for himself. We're all out to get ours. And that's kind of almost like a narrative that's built into us externally to a point. But to have a shared experience, to have truly a team environment where, you know, your success is my success, and we celebrate each other. You know, that's what we're building here, and that takes time. It's not something that I can just say and speak in front of the team and everyone gets it. You know, it's got to practice. It's got to be trained. You have to be able to do it when things are good, and you have to be able to do it when you're facing adversity. And once you take total ownership of it, what you're left with is something that is an emotional connector for everyone who watches it. And all that to say, that long lead-in just to say that, you know, I think what Kenny's doing in support of Mike and how he conducted himself, not just on Saturday, but through the week, as he totally supported Mike in his efforts as a first-time starter and celebrated both Mike's success and the team's success, the offense's success, you know, I think is certainly indicative of the program we're building, but also an indicator of the character of Ken Seals and kind of what type of person that is, and what a blessing it is for me to have a guy like that early in the infancy of this program to build the program around.
I think you indicated that Seals will not be ready to go this week. It'll be Mike Wright again. I'm noticing it looks like he's making some improvements on his throwing. I saw him hit a couple of deep balls early in the game, loosen up the defense. We know he can really make people miss when it's time for him to scramble, things like that. What kind of improvements are you seeing from Mike since you took over?
Well, the one thing circumstantially I felt on Saturday was I don't think he felt pressure to go out there and generate the big play every snap. You know, in the situations he's come in the game at previous times in the season, you know, he's probably felt the pressure like, you know, hey, I want to come back out here at some point. I need to make a play. I need to make something happen. I thought on Saturday he the game slowed down for him. He had really good command on the field. And he took the plays that were there. He made the throws when they were open. He threw guys open at times. He didn't force the ball though, and obviously we know he can make plays with his legs as well. So what I feel like he's advancing in is just the awareness that from his position he can strengthen the other 10 guys on the field on offense, and that's an incredible thing. That's how you get the team playing, is when you interlock all 11 on the field, and he can do that. What I loved is, you know, he made reads and made recognition of when he had a one-on-one matchup that he liked. He wasn't afraid to pull the trigger and take it. When it wasn't there, he either scrambled to make a play, he threw the ball away. There was just mature, smart decision making at that position, and that, you know, we've talked a lot about complementary football and how, you know, we've evolved in our understanding of what that means. It's not just about each phase playing well, it's about how each phase interlocks and unlocks performance in the next phase, and certainly, you know, protecting the ball. We've at times this year, turn the ball over in inopportune times and put a defense that's still trying to find its identity on the field in difficult circumstances. And on Saturday, we did that once. And you know what? The defense stepped up on that drive with a fourth down stop. It was a huge momentum builder for us. So it was exciting to watch, you know, that element of our game develop after it's been something we've talked about and really preached and taken ownership over as a program, you know, really since week one. And hopefully we continue to deepen that in terms of the complementary piece, because that's going to be what allows us to be competitive here and be in tight games that we can win as we finish off the season in conference.
Talking to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee here with us. And you know, you as you talk about your offense, but you being from the defensive side of the ball, how do you take, whether it's one play or one drive, like I'll use the last drive where South Carolina scores to win the game, how do you take those teaching moments and use them throughout the week to show your defense, you know, areas to improve? And how have you seen them take those teaching moments and in turn improve as you move along?
What we're dealing with, you know, this is true in not just at Vanderbilt, but in college football, you know, you're dealing with young players who are young in their career. You know, football is a game in high school. Like here in Nashville, there's generally 10 regular season games and then playoffs. And so in other sports, you play, you know, a couple of times a week in basketball, a couple of times a week in baseball. You're building schedules of, you know, 30, 40 games. And even in practice, you put the ball down and you're scrimmaging a lot and you're working through scenarios. And my point is that game exposure in other sports is more accessible, right? You play the game more in other sports. We practice more than we play. And so though we're really in tune and in touch to practicing situations, practicing those situations. For example, we work 2-minute drives once a week. That's a great competitive drill. It's also a systems check for us where, you know, you're putting coaches in positions to make calls in the moment. Those are great training grounds for what we experienced in the last drive on Saturday. And yet to do it in practice and to do it in the game are two different things. So with every exposure, you learn a little more about what it means to perform on Saturdays in the SEC. And what I'll say about with respect to how we've kind of taken that exposure and the learning from that exposure and kind of double down each week, I think even in the Colorado State game, particularly early, you know, we were chasing the ball around the field. We were not executing in our base structures. We had the energy and enthusiasm, but we didn't have the focus and detail needed. And that's both a coaching issue and a player issue. I mean, that there's total ownership there, right? We have to coach it better. We have to give them the specifics of where their eyes need to be, what they need to be seeing, and how they capture leverage and down the ball. And that was further exposed, you know, as we played Georgia, right? It was, you know, we were reacting to the ball and not, you know, what our read was telling us, so that we were never in position to anticipate where the ball was going to be and to constrict space around the ball. And that led to explosives, and that led to a long afternoon. I think as we've doubled down on this idea, what we're going to focus in detail on key points of execution, particularly in the safety and corner position, how we defend the perimeter, how we play physically through those perimeter screens and constrict space around the ball, you know, how we anticipate where the ball is going to be based off what our key tells us so that we can collapse the space early and make plays at the line of scrimmage. Those are things that have allowed us to find early down success. And ultimately on Saturday, what ended up being a sequence of stops there after, you know, the second drive of the game where they on 2nd and 17, they threw an explosive for right around 80 yards all the way until the 2-minute drive where they scored the go ahead touchdown. You know, there was a gap there of disruptive play, of, you know, three and outs, of stops where we were really functioning well as a defense. That has all been learned through the season. So, you know, part of insulation is, hey, where do I line up, right? And like, what is the coverage we're playing? Is it cover four? Is it cover three? Okay, what's my responsibility? And then the deeper you go, the more detailed you become. All right, in this call, I need to see the tackle to the tight end. And if it's pass, my eyes go here. And if it's run, here's where my eyes go. And I'm responsible for defending the perimeter here. So I need to make sure my cleats are in the ground on the snap. I'm not moving towards the ball. I'm not moving horizontally to coverage, but I'm staking the ground and reacting to the ball in the mesh or not. I know I'm getting a little nuanced and detailed there, but it's that level of understanding and awareness that allows for us to outperform our opponent, to get to our technique faster than the opponent. So the 2-minute sequence is, it both exposes holes in our preparation and exposes holes, gaps in some of our tactics where we need to solidify and teach better and build better understanding into our team. And it also builds in this situational learning where, you know, again, in that moment, it's 1:36 left and no timeouts. We've got to keep the ball inside and in front of us. We have to get it down, tackle it in bounds. And we have to force South Carolina to play against two opponents, both Vanderbilt defense and the clock. And we weren't able to do that because we surrendered chunks. And when you surrender chunks in that situation, you get on your heels. And a credit to South Carolina for putting that pressure on us. But we certainly can be better, and we will be better because of the experience.
Well, Mississippi State this weekend, best of luck against them for homecoming. Coach, thanks as always for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate you guys. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. Coach Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head coach, they take on Mississippi State this Saturday at Vanderbilt. So we'll talk about that. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. I want to ask these guys about a play that we haven't talked about yet, and we will do that on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 105 The Game.
Thank you, Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, for joining us. He does that every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. Don't forget to play silly underdog picks with us, weekly prizes. So if you haven't been playing, it's okay. Jump in there, play along. We'll review and make our new picks Thursday at noon. Don't forget, you, the listeners, get to pick three games. Remember, your team must win the game outright. This is not against the spread. You only get the points when your team wins the game out. That's how the spread comes into play. You get those points if your team wins the game outright. Go to thegamenashville.com for more details to play along. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Let's give you a chance to be in the building with us tonight here at Bridgestone Arena, where we are. We're live here at the Patron Platinum Club. Predators host the Los Angeles Kings tonight, and you've got a chance to see game three of this season. But you must text in the answer to this question. Text it in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Text in the answer to this question.
Who scored the first goal of the season in the regular season for the Nashville Predators?
I gave you the first goal on Saturday night. That was one question. Now, who scored the first goal of the season? Text that in. That was Thursday night against Seattle, and you could be here tonight. Okay, Chase, you wanted to bring up a play.
So I thought, and this was early in the game, and it looked like on the initial kickoff they were going to try it, but on the next punt, they tried to run home run throwback, which, of course, was the Music City Miracle play against the Buffalo Bills in 2000 that beat them, knocked them out of the playoffs, and the Titans, of course, went on that run to the Super Bowl. I thought it was a fantastic call to try and, you know, I called it a troll job. That's exactly what it was. It didn't work. They ran an illegal forward pass this time.
It was very illegal. It was at least five yards forward.
sitting in the stands, all the Buffalo fans go, 20 years later, they finally got it right.
Oh, you know it. The jokes were flowing.
Oh, yeah. And I was just saying, but the one that counted was still a lateral.
Now, Brian Griese on the broadcast, who we had on last week, who was great, he had a little trouble determining where that play started.
Yeah.
He was off by about 6 yards.
Yeah.
When he said the play. He's like, here he goes. He's right here. So you could see the throw was happening at the 33 or at the 27. And I was like, no, Brian, it's on the 33. It's on the other side of the 30. It was at the 33. But when you see it, doesn't matter if it was well, I guess it would matter.
Yeah.
But it was not even close.
It appeared to me on the kickoff, and Vrabel talked about this a little bit, because I saw Batson kind of bring the ball back, and then he brought it down real fast and just kept running, that it looked like they were going to try and run it then on the initial kickoff of the game, and then they did it on the punt. Did you guys like the idea of trying to do it, to get a big play?
Yeah, I think you pick your spots and you do it. And, you know, when they showed it from the end zone, it did look like they had the blocks set up to possibly have a big play that way. I don't know if I would call it home run throwback. It did not have the in-between guy, the lateral to...
There was no Lorenzo Neal.
No Lorenzo Neal involved.
There was never supposed to be a Lorenzo
Neal. I know.
that's the fun part of it.
But that was a pretty long pass that he's trying to... supposed to be a lateral that he was trying to execute. The problem with that is if you get pressure, which he did, he had the guy coming up on him. That rushed him for sure, and it gave him really no chance to throw it. You know, an untrained guy, you just don't – that's a tough one. And he's lucky that there wasn't anybody for the Bills close enough to intercept that ball. Because they could have
– Well, it's too bad that they didn't execute it properly because it was there. The play was there.
Oh, that's what I said. Yeah, when you looked at them draw it up, they had the block set up for sure.
It was six, I think.
I don't know if it would have been six. I mean, they did – like, he didn't take it all the way. So, I mean, he got stopped. I think it was at – I think he got it to, like, the 30 or something. But
I think he kind of knew. Like, as soon as the guy catches,
well,
it's
yeah,
kind of like,
yeah.
this is not standing.
I was going to say, he kind of – I agree with you. I don't know that.
You think
but
he held up?
I'm sure he felt like, oh, right. Yeah, that wasn't – that's not – this is not going to count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just it's like the guy, who was the Dawson Knox, the touchdown.
Yeah,
he was like,
he ran into the tunnel.
He's like, man, I saw about seven flags.
Yeah. Which ended up being a really big
stop. That was huge.
Stop.
Because they got a field goal out of that.
And how about the kickoff return for a touchdown?
Absolutely.
Where the guy's running and he looks back and he's got that disbelief. He's like, no.
Well, and I saw it immediately.
Way.
Right. He knew. Right. The same thing. He knew.
I'm that guy in the stands. Like, I saw the play and I'm like, throw the flag. Throw the flag.
It never ceases to amaze me about you cannot grab the jersey.
No,
I know,
and I don't think that guy had any chance of tackling
how
him.
How long is he holding it? It's like one thing to grab it, but he's holding the jersey. It's like, what did you think was going to happen, man? And then who was it for the Titans? He's selling it. I mean, he's holding his hands
like,
up
this?
In the
look
air.
At this.
He's like,
he's
look,
got my jersey.
I can't
he's
move.
It.
He's holding me.
Right.
And I don't think he was going to tackle that guy.
I don't think so either.
That's why when in doubt, don't ever grab.
Well,
guys,
and there was
it happens all the time.
There was a PI, it may have been the Borders one, that where he went on. There was a different one that they called PI, and it was blatant PI, but he didn't have to interfere. Like, it looked like he wasn't going to make the catch anyway.
Was that Carter? Was that Torrey Carter?
Maybe.
On the play? The hold? I was trying to
think.
It was 44 because I wasn't familiar with
it.
Yeah,
it might have
been Carter. I
think
that's him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the fullback.
You know what I see a lot is the defensive back, when he doesn't turn, and Borders did a good job on this on the last drive.
He
finally
did.
Turned.
He was beat, but he didn't.
But he got there and
he put
turned.
And he put his hands up, too.
Yeah. And so that was well done. But there was a couple other times, and he got nailed on one of them,
mm-hmm.
where if he just turns.
I mean,
He tried to hug a guy.
He tackled him. He hugged him. He fell on top. I mean,
but why?
That one had no
but why?
Chance.
Because he didn't know where the ball was. He got beat. But what I see sometimes is the quarterback will just throw it up there, and it's an underthrow to where it's like, I'm not a defensive back. I know it's harder than what I'm describing. But if you could just turn, he has inside position to catch the ball. But yeah. What happens is he keeps running at the receiver.
The receiver
comes back into him.
Right, he stops.
And he just falls down, and it's an automatic flag.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking
where
of.
It was a bad throw. Like, if just turn.
Right.
You got a chance.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking of was Jenkins. That Davis wasn't going to make the catch, and Jenkins got called for interference. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you had the play. Like, what? It was one of those situations. It was in the second quarter.
By the way, Josh Allen, who's tremendous, I mean, he's an MVP candidate, he threw a lot of ducks last night.
He threw some ducks.
He
missed a couple guys. Passes. In the red zone, that was the difference in touchdown and field goal a couple times.
He threw
bad
passes.
He puts it on the money once or twice in there. He's got two more touchdown passes.
I mean,
and I'm not
that
sure
one
the
Diggs,
Titans could have hanged.
Diggs is like, I'm here. He just threw a duck.
Well, Lewis Riddick also pointed out a few times where he had a receiver open and didn't see him, which does happen. I'm sure that happens all the time. You know?
Well, that was Diggs.
Yeah,
I think Sanders was one of them.
Beasley was one.
Well, they found Beasley enough.
Yeah, but there was. But when you're 2 for 5 in the red zone, you're looking back on that today and saying, "Man,
I'm
telling you, lost the game.
The first two the first two field goals of the game. I'm like, that's a win.
Yeah."
That's an absolute win.
I thought when you're looking at the Titans and all the defensive back issues they're having, I think you have to say that's about as good as you could expect to hold the Bills last night. They're not equipped. They took the run away. They did a good job with that. They got a decent amount of pass rush.
What run?
But when they have no
I mean, they took it away, but yeah, I mean, they don't really.
If you look at their
they did a good job on Josh Allen.
Allen's yards, they actually are up there in yards rushing. It's all by committee. It's not by one guy, but it's not that bad. It's enough to balance. It's like, you know, our guest Sal, he was saying, in today's, you throw to win, you run to sort of keep the defense honest. That's how they approach it. But they did a good job with that. They got torched some, but they knew, listen, we can't just give up these huge chunks. They're finally curtailing that a little bit, not giving up the big, big plays in the passing game. It was a pretty decent job of bending but not breaking.
Look, give the Titans offense credit. Do you know what the Bills had given up points per game for the season?
They had the number one defense by far.
Yes. You know how many points per game they were giving up on average?
Like 5.
No, for the season. 12. 12, which was number one in the league. Titans hung 34 on them.
Two shutouts. And they made them look very ordinary last night.
Right. Let's go to Chris on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm excellent after that game last night, I'll tell you what.
I bet. Were you there?
No, I wasn't there. I'm a diehard Titans fan. I'm probably one of the most diehard Titans fan in my area where I live in Paris, Tennessee. I haven't been to a game in years. I'd love to went last night, though. It was a great game. I met a family that was going to the game last night, and they were really excited. The old man on the way out the door, though, he said, I think we're going to get stomped tonight. Well, that's not what happened. But
well,
anyway,
every single guy on the Monday night panel picked the Bills.
Yep, every one of them.
Yeah.
I mean,
everybody thought that was going to happen. I told my dad last night, I said, I guarantee we're going to win this game. He said, oh, really? He said, what do you think the score's going to be? I said, 34-31. And I nailed it right on the mark. I couldn't believe it. But
Chris, we do a thing called Pick Six on Fridays. You should participate during the 1 o'clock hour.
Sir.
If you're that good, you should call in on Fridays and participate.
Well, I listen to you guys every day. I call in on the Jared Stillman show all the time. I haven't called in and talked to you guys yet, but I will definitely keep that in mind. I had a trivia question.
If you could give us a heads up too, by the way, of your predictions, we may try to win some money off of them. So let us know. If you get a strong feeling again, call in and let us know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I had a kind of a slight trivia question for you guys. Do you realize that last night was not the first time the Titans have run the home run throwback since the Music City Miracle? They also did it in 2012 against the Detroit Lions in one of the biggest games that nobody remembers.
They sure did. That was because Lowry was still here.
Yeah, see, a lot of people have been talking about that home run throwback today. And I thought, well, nobody probably remembers that happening against the Lions. I haven't heard anybody else bring it up. I just wanted to give you that piece of information, and I'll hang up and let you guys continue the show. But it was nice talking to you guys, and I will continue to listen to you every day. You do a great show. Thank you very much.
Don't be a stranger, thanks, Chris. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Was that Mary Annie that ran it? I remember. I was at that game
in 2012.
Yeah, because it was Alan Lowry was still here as the special teams coordinator. That was Munchak.
I mean, no offense, but Mariana was hurt a lot, so I don't.
That was
know.
A game that had a crazy ending, right? Didn't the Lions tie the game late? Am I remember this right?
Yeah, I think they. I think the Titans lost the game. Actually,
it was
2012.
2012 would have been the Jake Locker first year of Jake Locker as the starter.
Yeah,
I think there was an onside kick. I think.
Was that still Hasselbeck or was Hasselbeck?
No, it was Locker, and the Titans did win. It was overtime. They won in overtime, 44-41.
But the Lions tied it on an onside kick. They got it, scored, I think, to get it to overtime.
Tommy Campbell.
Guy they drafted in the seventh round. I believe he played at Pittsburgh and then transferred to, wasn't it like Pittsburgh State or something? He was a kid that, and he had troubles in college, but he was athletically gifted. They really liked him, but he had some issues in college. He was at a D1 school. I think it was Pittsburgh, and then he transferred. Wasn't he working at like the Pittsburgh airport cleaning trash?
There's a story there.
He was a great guy.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he's been playing many, many years in the CFL. I'm pretty sure.
I think
recently I turned on, maybe not this year, maybe last year. Whenever, in the last like 2 years, I turned on a CFL game and I was like, is that the same Tommy Campbell? And it was.
Yeah. Do you remember who? So now it's all coming back to me. Do you remember who threw the pass? So Campbell's who received it.
Tommy Campbell was fast.
And this
by
was
the
on
way.
A punt.
Was
remember?
Really
the,
fast.
The Music City Miracle was a kickoff. This was on a punt. But so
and Campbell was a defensive, he was a cornerback.
Yeah. So Graham punts it. 38 yards to the Tennessee 37. It's fielded by...
In 2012?
Yeah. You'll never get this.
Okay, tell me what side of the ball.
Running back.
A running back.
I think.
Don't tell me Amard Hall.
No. Yeah, it was a running back. Yep. He played for the Titans... This was his only year. He played
2012.
Year and a half he played for the Titans.
A year and a half in 2012. Obviously, Chris Johnson was on that team. Who was like his backup? Who was the backup to Chris Johnson 2012?
You're never going to get it.
Really?
Willie's not even trying.
Really? Yep. Okay, so right on us. If you say we have no idea, who?
Darius Raynon.
Oh, gosh. Darius Raynon. He was also a big special teams guy.
Yeah.
West Virginia, is that right?
That sounds right, yeah.
He won the return job.
Yeah.
Right. He had some highs and lows.
He had some definitely lows.
Well, he started the year, gave up a safety. Remember, he gave up a safety on the very first play of the year?
West Virginia, Darius Raynon.
I also think he ran one or two back for a touchdown.
I'm going to look up Tommy Campbell. I'm almost positive.
But it was
the same guy, and he was playing CFL.
Yeah, Campbell ran it 65 yards for a touchdown. So you're right. Chris was right. That is I guess they're 2 of 3 on home run throwback, if you want to, you know, that concept. But the kickoff, the Music City Miracle, and we've had Lorenzo Neal on the show several times. You know, he was there as an option. Like if it was a short kick, he can go up and field it. But it was in the sense of the play, it was supposed to be fielded by by Wycheck.
Okay, I was right. So listen, he started off at Pitt, then went to Edinburgh, then went to California, Pennsylvania. So I mean, that's what I'm saying. He had academic issues. He had a lot of issues, and then he was a janitor at the Pittsburgh Airport. I remember talking. He was a great guy. He was, and sure enough, I was right. He was spent a lot of time in the. He was playing in the CFL last year. I remember seeing that. So he spent, looks like about 5 years in the CFL after the NFL. Golly, Tommy Campbell.
Yep.
Good call, by the way, to bring that up. Good job. That was a crazy game.
Yep.
Darius Raynon. And that was a good way of putting it, Willie. Darius Raynon.
There was
some good, but boy, there was some bad too.
And that is one thing you, especially now where teams seem to be able to cover better, they have minimized the return game for a lot of reasons. There is something to be said of just not having anything disastrous happen. Just give us the ball, go as far as you can, hold on to the ball, and we'll take it where we get it.
Here's what's amazing about this game as we walk down memory lane. The Titans were very
much... Was
this
really a big game?
Well, no, but the Titans were... It was
an exciting game.
It was, because the Titans were in control.
Yes.
And in the fourth quarter, Detroit picks up a fumble, runs it back for a touchdown, and then they score two touchdowns on their next possessions. Baronis kicks a field goal to tie it back. Then it goes into overtime, and Baronis kicks the 51-yarder to win it. And that's how the Titans won it.
They won a lot of games on the leg of Baronis.
In fact,
that was like Stafford early on. That was what, like year two or three?
He got hurt.
They were good.
He got hurt. Sean Hill finished the game.
Oh, in that game?
Yep. Sean Hill finished the game. Nate Burleson was in that game.
Yep.
Was a receiver. But yeah, because Sean Hill was on the final drive and they turned it over on downs in overtime, because that I want to say, well, that was the early days of the new rule of if you kick a field goal, the other team gets a chance.
Yep.
So Baronis kicked a 51-yarder, and then Detroit had a chance, and they had a nice drive going, and then got fourth. They were at the Tennessee 7, fourth and one, and Sean Hill went up the middle for minus one. Jarrell Casey with the stop.
I went on with Vince. Vince was doing like a Nashville hour on WNML.
Yeah, I was
night.
On right after you.
Okay. And so he did Titans and Predators. And so after that, I watched a lot of the pregame leading up. And I'll tell you what, they certainly didn't miss. I mean, they examined the miracle play, Music City Miracle, a lot. I mean, they had Kevin Dyson. They had Jeff Fisher. They had a lot of parties involved breaking that down many, many times. They certainly did. So it was interesting that play happened considering how much they talked about it in pregame.
Well, and that's where I will give Mike Vrabel props, because that's the mind game that you have to play as a head coach. And I think
– And they had Lowry, by the way, too.
And even though the play didn't work, they didn't run it right, just trying it. You know, send a message of like, "Hey, I'm in your head. I'm trying to get in your head." Even though everybody on both teams, nobody had anything to do with that.
Nothing to do with it.
20 years ago, it's just knowing the history, knowing the fan base, knowing that it's back at that stadium, and the type of game, that magnitude that game had. I was like, when he did it, I said, "Hey, you know what? I respect it. I respect trying to run that play." So. It's creative, and obviously it got people going. It got people talking.
We'll come back. We'll put a bow on Tuesday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase next. That's what the Titans fans were saying to the Bills fans last night at Nissan Stadium. Hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Vanderbilt take on Missouri over on West End, that'll be next Saturday, October 30th, the day before Halloween. Head over to YouTube. Subscribe to 102.5 The Game's YouTube page, and you'll be entered automatically for a chance to see Vandy and Missouri. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com. With your YouTube handle, one winner will be chosen, and that'll be this Monday, October 25th. So keep that in mind. We had Clark Lee on to begin the hour. So we talked a little bit earlier about Julio Jones and thought, you know, sitting there. In fact, we were texting last night. It was like 3rd and 6, a big play in the fourth quarter, and they're showing Julio Jones just standing there on the sidelines, and it's like, what is going on? Here we are again. His helmet's on. It's not like his helmet's off. He's in street clothes. You know, he's sitting there just standing on the sidelines with a helmet on a huge play.
Well, if I recall, the first play of the drive was a running play, and he was on the field, and they showed him coming off gingerly, sort of limping. And I don't know that they talked about it a whole lot, but you could see him come off the field. And that drew my attention because then they start the drive that goes down and scores what ends up being the winning touchdown. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina makes 3 catches. He makes a really nice block during the same period of time. This happened quick, so I don't know that there's time to have somebody go down and check, hey, is he injured? They, you know, report back to the booth. He's injured. His return is questionable. So I'm not sure that Lewis Riddick was remembering what happened, but anybody who's watched all the Titans games can vividly remember the Colts game where this very same type thing happened, and they weren't really sure. Is he hurt? Is he not hurt? I assume this time he had to be hurt.
Yeah, because Craig Levin said today he's day-to-day, essentially.
But it was kind of a grumbly, yeah we'll just see how it goes. Yep. We'll take it day by day. I don't know that did he clarify anything? I remember after the Colts game, he was pressed pretty hard, Variable was he hurt? Was he not hurt? Was he available? Not available. And you got that tightness thing. I guess they spared him of that last night? Or were there questions to that effect? Or did he say he was injured?
It looks
pretty clear that he aggravated something.
Yeah.
But yet, he's standing there with his helmet on, and Lewis Riddick at one point says, hey, if I'm Julio Jones, I'm saying I got to be in there.
I know, and I'm like, well,
but Lewis, I think he's hurt.
I think there's a reason why he's not in there.
But it looks exactly like before. And what's interesting is both times this has happened, they've gone down and scored, and his replacement, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, has done really well. He made some clutch
you
plays.
You love NWI, don't you?
Yeah, well, you gotta give me something. He was clutch in that drive. He made three catches on that drive.
He did.
Yeah. One of them was a 3rd down.
Catches of the game, but yes.
Well, he wasn't playing before. Yeah. He wasn't in there much, but he made a couple nice special teams plays.
Yep.
But now
I think I know what I'm getting him for Christmas, Jace.
Westbrook-Ikhina jersey,
number 15 jersey.
Yeah. You think the Titans will let me get it?
They probably don't make
some
them.
Kind of a discount or something.
I don't think they make.
Joe Rexroth has a button that says, you know,
NWI.
Yeah, NWI. That he loves NWI. You and Joe Rexroth are in the NWI fan club. Which
look,
I think is
he saved the day on those. If what are we talking about? If they mess up that drive and lose the game, it's kind of
Julio
Jones. Where's Julio?
Yep.
Where's Julio? Yeah. What happened to Julio?
But we're still talking about it.
Well, we are.
But to your point, it will be magnified.
The question is it that he's truly hurt and like he's aggravated?
He's got to be hurt.
That's why I'm asking the or is this the he's tight again and it's the paranoia of we don't want to get him hurt worse. You know which one is it? Because he's standing there with his helmet on.
It's game on the line. That's what's really interesting
about
these things.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is what we were talking about earlier. So you weigh in on this as we wrap this up. So this is what it's going to be all year, right? He's not going to be 100%. Like, let's just throw that notion out the window as we sit here at Patron Platinum Club. So are you okay with 3 quarters or a half or 3.5 quarters?
This 15, 16, load management kind of
just,
stuff.
Or just play until it starts tightening up, and then he's. Are you okay with that, or would you just rather him be inactive?
I think they've got to deal with it.
Which game would you play?
They've got to get the most out of him. Joe Rexroth suggested they shut him down for a month or whatever.
But why?
He's
not going to be 100% no matter what.
That's kind of what I
feel. It doesn't matter. It changes nothing. So would you rather just shut him down? And it's not changing anything. He's still not going to be 100%. Don't forget, he dealt with this all last year. He did nothing in camp. He did nothing in preseason. And we're still talking about the same thing that haunted him all last year with Atlanta.
Assuming that is what it is, which it appears to be.
It seems like that's what it is. So what game do you want to play? To me,
I don't know.
It's like, I think that's why Vrabel's probably frustrated. It's like, well, we got to keep trotting him out there and just get it. We'll just take what he can give us.
I also wonder if there if at either of these times, what the dynamic is, the communication is, because we heard that whole thing about Julio takes himself out of the game sometimes. So I don't know if it's once you take yourself out, you don't have the right to just go back in. Hey, we're on a roll. We got our guys going. Just you're good. You stay there. Even though he's got the helmet on. I don't understand that's working.
As we learned yesterday, I would like to know. You just have to set out a play. That's it. That's what we learned yesterday.
Yeah?
Well, you just have to set out a play.
It looked like he was over there with his helmet on. Like, do you want to come back in? Did he want to come back? I don't know. It's all good because the stunt double, NWI, goes in there and does the job, and they score.
All right, that will do it for our show today. Spirited show. Good stuff. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want to have you back with us tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.